for inviting me to give this talk. I will talk about some rather recent work jointly with Eldad Bettelheim, Ilya Rushkin, and Paul Wigman. And this concerns some geometric characterization of random curves, which we see in critical systems. These are typical examples of what objects we're interested in. In Ising model, it's criticality, or in population criticality, we have this fractal clusters, and the domain, boundary domains between the up and down spins, or boundary of this cluster, is a typical example of a curve that we would be interested in. We would like to characterize this curve somehow. So SLE, with the hindsight of SLE, we know that one can actually simplify the problem. Instead of thinking about the whole collection of curves, we just focus on one single curve by imposing specific boundary conditions on the boundary of a domain. So for an Ising model, we can force all the spins to be up on this part of the boundary and to be down on this part of the boundary. That will ensure that there's a single interface going from A to B. In percolation, it's the same story. We can fix all the sides to the left to be black and all the sides to the right of the certain point of the boundary to be white. And another thing is that the systems we are studying are supposed to be conformally invariant in some precise sense. And the conformal invariance implies that we can, in particular, study the systems in one reference domain, and everything else, every other domain, can be obtained by a conformal transformation. So typically, we're thinking about the upper half plane, where this interface goes from the origin to infinity. And this is the sort of lattice version of SLE6, which is the percolation. Okay, now, sorry, oops. Yeah, so what do we know, what do we want to know about these curves? We want to know their fractal dimensions. A multifractal spectrum of harmonic measures is the subject of my talk, really. But there are other things, crossing probabilities, left versus right passage probabilities, and many more that have been discussed in the literature. And they somehow relate probabilistic and geometric aspects of these curves. Now let me explain what this harmonic measure is. So there are several equivalent definitions. If you have a closed loop in the complex plane, we can focus on a portion of this loop called gamma I here, and we can release a Brownian particle from infinity, and when it hits this, so essentially we can find the probability that when it hits the cluster, it's this curve, it hits it along this portion of the boundary. This is the probability pi, which is between 0 and 1, and it's called harmonic measure of this piece of the boundary. And the electrostatic analogy, which is useful in gaining some intuition about it, for a physicist, is that we can imagine that this cluster is charged with charge 1, and then the total charge along this portion of the boundary is exactly pi, if we assume the total charge of the cluster is 1. One of the crucial points in the whole talk will be that the behavior of the harmonic measure on the curve is closely related to the behavior, local behavior electric field near the cluster. Essentially, you can think about it this way, that if a curve were smooth, then the charge distribution would have a density there. There will be some function, which is the density of charge there. And from basic electrostatics, from Gauss' law, essentially, you know that the density of charge on the surface is equal to electric field, normal component of electric field on the surface of that thing. So electric field is, roughly speaking, the charge density. So the integral of electric field along the boundary is the harmonic measure then. And so that integral can be sort of estimated by a Gauss theorem, essentially. And so, but there's singular situations, of course, when you have corners on the curve, then the charge density can be infinite at this point. Nevertheless, the harmonic measure of a finite portion of this curved here will still be finite. It's related to essentially the behavior of the potential near this point, some distance away from it. Okay. So if you take the derivative, then the electric field will be divergent at this point, but the potential is still finite. And that's what the object we're looking toward. Now this is a graphical representation of this harmonic measure, if you want. So on the left, this is an actual GLA cluster instead of a critical curve, but this sort of illustrates the point for complicated geometry anyway. So the boundary conditions are that the cluster itself is at the potential zero, and far away the potential is one. And then the white scale here is negative of the log of the potential. So it goes from zero essentially to infinity on the cluster, and somehow at some step. It's not very well, it's just to illustrate that probably this is a better picture of illustrating how complicated the distribution of electric field around this cluster is. So the what's drawn here are equipotential potential lines, and each line is separated by a decay in the potential. So you can see that before you, so the gravitational lines with potential which is tenths of the previous one may become very deeply entrenched into this whole thing. So somehow it's a very complicated distribution. So what's the way to characterize this precisely? So one introduces this multifractal exponents by the following construction. First of all, the picture here sort of illustrates, again, some cluster, random cluster, and the size of the points on the boundary of this cluster represents the Hitting probability of this harmonic measure of this portion of the boundary. So it's big on the exposed branches, it's very small down in the fjords. And so precise definition, precise characterization of the harmonic measure of this complicated object is obtained in the following way. One has to cover the curve by small disks of radius r, and then calculate the charges of probabilities inside each disk, and then sum them up, take them to the power h, sum them up over all the disks, and perform some average. This average is an aspect of the whole story that I probably want to skip, but really, I mean, it's difficult to get into details. So the thing is that we usually think about these clusters or curves as being members of a huge ensemble. Like the Silly curve is a member of a huge measure. I mean, this, lots of different realizations of these SLE curves. And so this averaging is, roughly speaking, the averaging with respect to that measure. So we have to average over the ensemble of these curves. Then these things happen to scale as the ratio of the size of the little disk divided by the size of the cluster to some power tau of h. And the tau of h for a multifractal measure is a nonlinear function of h. If the curve were a smooth curve, then you know in the limit r going to zero, we would have simply tau h being equal to h minus 1. It's very easy to see to the linear function. And so our problem is to find this tau h for critical curves. So now I'm going to deviate from Craig Lowler's route, and I'm going to acknowledge somebody in the audience. So so this fractal spectrum, this multifractal spectrum, was actually found by Bertrand de Plantier in a series of papers. He sort of gradually went from frontiers of Brownian motion to percolation to arbitrary critical systems with central charge less or equal to one. And he obtained this beautiful formula as well as many other formulas. Using quantum gravity formalism that he can talk, I mean, it's not the subject of my talk, so but it's kind of beautiful but difficult approach. So what we want to do, we want to essentially reproduce this result and understand it maybe in a different way by appealing only to traditional conformal field theory methods. And in this way, we can also obtain various other exponents. But one thing to stress is that this method is not restricted to conformal field theories with less C's less than one. One can try to do the same things for other conformal field theories. Okay, so let me say a few words about how we do these things. So there are several, so the derivation of these exponents using conformal field theory is sort of involved. I think of it as being simpler than quantum gravity derivation, but still it involves several steps. Each of the steps is a simple step, but there are many of them, and so in the end you get sort of complicated picture. So I'll try to walk you through these things, and please ask questions when you have them. So first of all, the first statement is that the usual definition of these moments involves what I would call global moments, meaning that we would sum over all the points on the boundary, or all of these on the boundary. On the other hand, you can think of local moments where you simply focus on one single point, and you consider all the curves from the ensemble that are conditioned to go through that point, and look at this behavior of the harmonic measure just at this point. This is what I would call P tilde, and the corresponding exponent is called tau tilde of H. Then you can sort of think that there's some ergodicity relation relating the two things, meaning that summation over all the disks over here is equivalent to averaging procedure over here. Okay, so if you do this, then you say that these things are simply related, because this object and this object differ by a factor of n, essentially. That's all, right? And the factor of n is related to the fractal dimension, of course, of the curve. And so there are simple ergodicity relations between the different exponents, tau of h and tau tilde of h.
Is this as different from just saying it's multiplicative?
No, I don't think so. But
okay.
Well, you might you see, the point is that, okay, I guess what I'm trying to really say is that if you focused on a single curve, not an ensemble of curves,
sure,
then of course behavior here will be different from behavior here, from behavior here.
But statistically,
yeah, that's right.
Is it proven or not that it's an argument?
Nothing is proven.
Okay.
No, nothing is this talk is proven. I mean, it's a physics talk, right? So. Actually, Bertrand de Pointier will be presenting similar talk here later. So he will be proving things, and so you may want to ask him about the proofs and precise definitions. No, by the way, I mean, this is jokes aside, I mean, way of getting things in physics is different from way of getting things in math, and we know the answers, but to make them precise and rigorous is a very hard work, and that's what many mathematicians are working on right now. So, okay. Now, the next step is to realize that the harmonic measure is related to derivatives of the conformal map that uniformizes this domain. And so there are several ways of thinking about it. First of all, let me give you first a physical argument. So again, it's the Gauss theorem that says that the amount of charge in this domain here is equal to the flux of the electric field through the boundary of the disk which surrounds this part, right? But this flux can be estimated at the value, typical value of the field, some distance r, r is the radius of this domain, away from this boundary, times the length of the boundary, which is the same r. So this is how you get this estimate. So the electric field at this point is actually equal to absolute value of the derivative of the conformal map that uniformizes this domain at this point. And r is the length of the boundary. Another way of seeing this is saying that harmonic measure is conformally invariant, and so the harmonic measure of this portion of this curve is the same as harmonic measure of the portion of the unit circle, which is simply equal to the difference between the length of this segment here, which is again this thing here, and that's how you get the system again. So then this local moment is simply related to the estimate of the expectation value of the h power of the derivative of the conformal map. And so we get this shifted exponent now that we'll call delta bulk. So this realization that multifractal exponents are related to derivative expectation values is nothing new. In fact, I think it was introduced in math literature way back, but from the other side. They were estimating the derivative of the conformal map from the other side, this inverse map, and that was called the integral means spectrum. So this integral mean spectrum is related to the multifractal spectrum in some simple way, but I'm not going to really explain it. But that way of doing things is has really nice application. SLE is a nice application I don't know what's application on what, but for SLE one can do this estimate very nicely, and it's Budaev and Smirnov recently published a paper on, it's not published, but it's on the web, where they estimate this spectrum for SLE curves. So essentially, again, giving getting back to the Pointier's results with some rigorous statements about that. Now, we instead use conformal field theory methods, and the basic idea behind this is that the derivative of a conformal map you get for free if you have some correlation function with a primary operator inside. When you transform this correlation function, this derivative pulls out of the correlation function. It's exactly that that what Greg in the last talk called partition function. In our language, it's correlation function. It will appear soon again. So there are several generalizations of what I was talking about. One can put this point on the... So the thing I was talking about was here, and that's this object right here. But one can consider a curve that touches the boundary at various points, and you can think of, you know, probing electric field near the point where it touches the boundary. Or you can have several curves in the near the boundary or in the bulk, and there are various uniformizing maps that you can study here, and their derivatives can be combined in various ways. And so there are higher multifractal exponents to be obtained. Now, in this notation, where n curves are present and meeting at a point in the bulk, I call this delta n bulk. So the original exponent that was introduced before is delta 2, because there are two curves meeting at the point here, okay? Given one point going through this point. Okay, here's our main character. It's exactly what Greg was calling partition function. But for us, it's a ratio of two partition functions. So you should think about it this way. So you can study the system with uniform boundary conditions and just sum over all the spins in it or whatever, or microscopic user freedom. And this way you get this partition function z. On the other hand, you can impose this boundary condition, specific boundary condition that makes sure that there's an interface going between the two points. And with this boundary condition, partition function is different. And the ratio of the two is the correlation function that I think is your partition function.
Not exactly.
No?
You're close enough to this one.
Okay. So in field theory language, this is called, or conformal field theory language, this is called boundary condition changing operator. And so it's some local object that's inserted here that makes sure that we have this. In effect, this is a definition of this object, if you want. Now, very important technical detail here is that, which I think was crystallized clearly enough in the work of Michel Bauer and Denis Bernard, though they claim that it's been forever in the statistical literature, is that you have any correlation function in the presence of these two boundary operators can be evaluated in two steps. One can say that let's first focus on configurations, microscopic configurations, for which this boundary is specific shape, specific curve gamma. And then you average over microscopic degrees of freedom in the presence of a given shape gamma. That's the first step. And the second step, you average over all possible shapes of gamma. Okay? This is a very useful trick. In a sense, it gives you the following statement, that the partition function in the presence of these boundary operators, when the gamma is fixed, then the interior portion of the gamma and the exterior portion of the gamma are completely decoupled, because the boundary is fixed. So the spins there are not talking to each other. And so you can evaluate them separately, and that breaks the partition function into two, in the product of two things. And then over bar means the averaging over the all the curves gamma. Okay. So that's an example of this two-step average, which we can put to further use by slightly looking at a slightly more complicated object. Now, as I told you already, we want to get at some point the derivatives of conformal map. So to do that, we insert another primary field. So in this particular example, I'm focusing on this situation where we have boundary. So boundary operator will be inserted at point R. The primary operator, the probe of the conformal harmonic measure will be inserted at point R. This field here, boundary changing operator, will be here. So again, the same story happens here, that you can average this quantity. This is a correlation function in the upper half plane, but you can think about evaluating it in two steps. the first step would be fixing the curve gamma, and then for a fixed gamma, of course, you get the correlation function for these operators, OH and another companion of it, in the exterior of gamma times the partition functions, and then you average over the curves. Okay? And we need only the R dependence of this object in a small R limit. And I'm not going to really explain what this means. It means that we don't care about this L, we can send L to infinity, and these two fields somehow merge into a single operator that we don't really need. And it's only present in the correlation function to ensure that it's non-zero, essentially. So we're not going to worry about it anyway.
So somehow this is two dimensions.
Yeah.
You can do this.
Sure.
And you could not do that in a because there's a dimension associated with the operator.
So you're talking about two spatial dimensions or
space time?
Yeah.
This you could not do, I don't think, in a two-dimensional, four-dimensional context. Because of the dimension associated with the operator. Never mind,
Well, conformal field theory in three dimensions is sort of more or less useless because conformal transformations form only a finite group, right? So there's no analog of the Riemann theorem. You cannot transform arbitrary shaped three-dimensional domain to a ball.
Well, that's not exactly...
No, this is the statement.
But that's not exactly the point that I'm making, that there has to be a correction to this.
No, that's criticality. Why should there be any correction? I don't see any correction. Why?
It's because there's no dimension associated with... There's no engineering dimension associated with the operator. No, it's not...
I'm not sure. On the right-hand side, what happens is that the main contribution to the R dependence comes from this correlation function. All these things are sort of irrelevant for this, and we can simply ignore them. In the end, the main result is that, the intermediate main result is that the correlation function in the upper half plane is related to the correlation function in the exterior of this complicated domain, averaged over the domain shapes. The next step is to transform this exterior of the domain. Yes?
So what you've done is send one of the points to infinity, is that right?
Sorry?
Is one of the points at infinity now, the left infinity?
Yeah, you can think of this just an SLE curve going all the way to infinity, yeah. Or think about Riemann sphere. It's a half of the Riemann sphere, and I think the next two points on it. Does that help?
Yeah, so the point of doing this fusing is just sending one.
Let me stress one thing. So we're really interested in the local properties of the curves. We really want to look at it closely. So mm-hmm. What happens far away doesn't really concern us. That's why we can send it to infinity. And it's not even, I don't know even why I put it here. It's just simpler to write the three-point function and the four-point function. It's just... Okay. So the next step is that we map the exterior of this curve to the upper half plane again by a conformal map that satisfies certain normalization conditions. And then this is the definition of a primary field. That's exactly the same behavior that was exhibited by partition functions in Gregg's talk. So when you transform a domain, what happens is that the field gets multiplied by the derivative of the conformal map to some power. And therefore, the correlation function in this complicated domain is nothing but a different correlation function in the simpler domain, in the upper half plane, times the power of the derivative. And then putting all things together, the last factor here is some partition function in upper half plane, which is just a number. It doesn't really depend on R, because it involves large distances between these two points. And so the final result of this part of the talk is that the expectation value of the derivative of the map is related to a correlation function of some fields in the upper half plane. So now the next step would be to find this correlation function in some way using conformal field theory. to do that, we need to know what this object here B is, what this boundary operator in some precise sense. Because we know there are some rules of calculating these things if we know what they are. So that's been known for quite some time. All these operators have been identified long ago. And essentially, the way we would like to identify them goes through the route called Coulomb gas formalism. And it's an old studied problem or technique, and I'm not going to present it here in any detail. There are lots of subtleties in here, but the basic idea is that in a given statistical mechanics model, you can represent the partition function as in terms of some closed loops. And in this way, they're called loop models. They're still on the lattice. Then you can go from the loops to oriented loops. And for oriented loops, you can introduce the height function on the dual lattice, such that it goes from 0 to pi when you cross the loop from left to right, or to minus pi if you go from right to left. Okay? There's some chirality involved in this. And then these height fields on the dual lattice, they're still discrete functions on the lattice, in the continuum limit are believed to converge to some kind of Gaussian free field. It's, again, there's lots of subtleties here. I'm not pretending that this is simple, but it's sort of standard in physical literature. One important statement here is that the field is compactified in a natural way, meaning that in the original model, when you present it in terms of loops, the loops are not oriented. So you don't actually know, there's no difference between pi and minus pi. In the oriented loop models, there is a difference, but not in the original one. And therefore, 0 and 2 pi should be identified. That's translated into the word compactified in the Poissonic field. And so the action of the corresponding field theory after all these transformations are done looks like this. R is the scalar curvature of the manifold you're working on. And there's some parameters here involved. So it's some standard normalization of the field that removes any coupling constant in front here. Everything else is pulled into a compactification radius of this field and parameter alpha naught and alpha plus minus. So everything else, again, can be in the end related to a parameter kappa that is specifically chosen to be the same as an SLE. Namely, this model has two phases, dilute and dense, and they correspond to kappa less than 4 and kappa greater than 4.
Can you say a word about what the R is in the action?
This
you said
R
it's related
is
to
the curvature
of the manifold? The
curvature of the manifold, that scalar curvature.
But the problems we're interested in, that vanishes, typically?
Not quite.
Or
I mean, you should, well, so, okay.
Or is this related to the curvature of the compact, of the necessary compactification of the manifold?
So there are several ways of thinking about it. So if you want to deal with an infinite system, then you should put it on Riemann sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And then that has some curvature that can be really pulled all the way to infinity. You can make it singular at infinity and zero everywhere else. This term will still be present and affect your correlation functions.
Mm-hmm.
This is called the charged infinity or background charge. On the other hand, you can study also things on systems at the boundary. And then there's another term which has to be added here, which involves the curvature of the boundary. And that's somehow not really. Again, there are lots of details here that I don't want to go into privately, possibly. So the central charge of this model is related to this alpha naught or kappa in the standard way. This is the same formula that Greg showed today earlier. So it's 6 minus kappa times 8 kappa minus 3 divided by 2 kappa. It's the same thing. Now, in the Coulomb gas formalism, it's useful to split the. By the way, I mean one thing to be stressed here is that the action doesn't look real here. And this is just a trick that allows to write everything locally. If one was allowed to write non-local actions, you could deal with a the real situations, but here somehow you have to do it in a complex language, and so even the classical configurations of this field are not real valued functions, okay? Therefore, it's sort of, to avoid lots of confusion, that's important to stress here. So then you split this field into holomorphic and anti-holomorphic parts, and well, from the basic action, you know that their correlation functions are logarithms, and then the basic primary fields in the theory are what's called vertex operators, which can be written in using the field and its conjugate through Riemann dual, if you want, or the original, or the splitting phi and phi bar this way. And so these fields have certain dimensions. The primary fields with certain dimensions that transform nicely under conformal transformations. And again, one of the basic identities is that correlation functions of these fields can be calculated very easily using Gaussian integrals. They're simply power laws of the distance between the points where these fields are inserted. And in general, you have the more complicated product of power laws, but this is all well understood. Okay, so using this vertex operators, we can identify the curve creating things in the configuration of loops or configuration of curves. So when we put magnetic charge at some point and we take electric charge and move it around it, we acquire a certain phase. And you remember that each curve in the original mapping from the lattice model to Coulomb gas represented a step in the height function. So each curve increases a step, increases the height function by a certain value. So when we cross n curves and go around this star of curves, we have to increase this height function by n times pi r, where r is the quantification radius. On the other hand, direct calculation of this phase gives this number here. So we have to relate the magnetic charge of the operator that we inserted to the number of curves we want to create by this fashion. That gives us the answer for the magnetic charge of this operator. So in other words, this argument tells us exactly what the operator that creates n curves in the bulk is. Or the same argument shows what the operator that creates n curves coming from the bulk. I can explain these things in more details Friday. So there's some standard notation in conformal field theory literature that denotes charges as linear combinations of this alpha plus and alpha minus that appeared before. And so in this notation, the boundary n curve operator happens to be psi 1 comma n plus 1 with charge 1 alpha 1 comma n plus 1, which is related to kappa in this way. And the bulk operator that creates n curve merging in a point on the bulk is psi 0 comma n by 2 with this charge. Specifically, one curve on the boundary is created by psi 1, 2, and that's exactly that operator B that appeared before in the relation function. Its charge is 1 over kappa, and I haven't written the dimensions because I'm not actually going to use them here, but the dimension of this operator is exactly the 6 minus kappa divided by 2 kappa that appeared in Berg's talk. I think he called it B. Right? Yeah. It's the same object. And now the operator that we put here to probe the harmonic measure can be again realized as simply a vertex operator with a certain charge that is related to the dimension in this way. And finally, we get to the main formula, namely that the correlation, the expectation value of the power of the derivative of the conformal map is given by this correlation function that is trivially calculated using this rule shown above. So you know how to calculate correlation functions of vertex operators. They're simply products of power laws. So in this case, we need only one power law, the distance between this point r and point 0, and the power is twice the product of the charges of the operators. So that's this dimension delta h for the boundary. And that's the first non-trivial dimension appearing in all this business. So written in terms of the central charge, it looks like this. And if you look at the quantum gravity literature, this is exactly what's called gravitationally dressed dimension. So there's a relation between dimensions of fields on in flat geometry and in fluctuating geometry, given by this complicated formula. KPZ stands for Nizhny Polyakov Zamolodchik. These are people who first discovered this relation. So we haven't done any quantum gravity here. So that's somehow, it looks strange that we have simply Coulomb gas, some fusion of charges, and we get gravitational dimensions. So there's some hints that quantum gravity is somewhere here. And the way to think about it probably is that just fluctuating shape of this curve is the quantum gravity that is somehow getting behind this whole story. Now we can generalize this, of course, to higher multifractal exponents. So if we have several curves on the boundary, we have this other operator here with different charge, and the corresponding dimension, corresponding multifractal exponent gets multiplied by n. But we can also consider several points in different sectors created by these curves and look at the products of powers of derivatives at different points in these different sectors. And then this higher multifractal exponent depends on a whole bunch of h's. This is the answer for the whole thing. And since I still have some time, let me briefly go through this derivation. It sort of differs from the previous one in certain aspects. So first of all, since we now need a product of several derivatives to some powers, we should insert several probes for the harmonic measure. Therefore, we consider a correlation function which contains not only this boundary curve creating operator, but also a product of other operators put in these points here. And without any transformation, this correlation function can be calculated using, again, the Coulomb gas rules. But one has to remember that now we are evaluating it in the upper half plane, and the rules of the boundary conformal field theory tell us that you have to think of each operator as having an image across the boundary. And then the correlation function will be given by product of pairwise of terms which involve pairwise distances between all the charges, all the points here. Okay, so this is what's written here. So you can have a point interacting with its image over here, or it can interact with other points like here, and it also can interact with image of other charges like that over here. So if all the points are separated distance r from the origin, the scaling of this whole thing is r to some power, which is simply given in terms of the charges related to the dimensions of these operators. The reason I put primes here will be seen very soon. This is the main difference between this case and the previous case. Namely, when we transform this correlation function to the upper half plane using this random conformal transformation, we of course have a bunch of derivatives coming out, but the correlation functions remaining here, this correlation function is still non-trivial, it still has some R dependence. Namely, when we transform this situation into the upper half plane, the points here get separated by large distances because they're in different sectors separated by the curves, but they're still close to their images. And so there's still some residual small r dependence coming from these pairs. So in principle, this function can be exactly correlated, calculated for all contributions can be taken into account, but what's important here is only the pairwise interaction of a charge with its image in this simple geometry. That's what giving us this term here. Okay, the rest is not important, so we drop it. And again, this can be evaluated for points of distance r. And then we see that what we get out of this calculation is product of the derivatives of this map to some powers which are not the original hi primes. That's why I used primes, because I need to now identify this exponents hi with this expression. And they happen simply to be dimensions of the boundary operators that are obtained by fusing this with this. So then you fuse two charges alpha I prime, you get the charge 2 alpha I prime, and the corresponding dimension is h I.
And why is it clear that after the conformal transformation, the pairs are well separated?
Well, because you think of a star, well, that creates, so you see, it's like SLE map. It stretches the whole thing, right? It stretches the boundary, right?
Sure.
So if you sit in two different sectors, after this stretching, you happen to be far away. I mean, these points are far from each other. Well, in fact, if you round t to infinity, they're infinitely far from each other. Does this answer your question?
Well, there has to be some comparison between the time scale of the curve and the distance r.
Again, it's a similar question to what Rick was asking. Since I'm interested in only in local properties of these things, I don't really care. I mean, it could be an SLE which was run for a finite time, or it could be an SLE run for an infinite time. It doesn't really matter. I mean, locally, nothing changes. And so imagine that you're running it for a long time, and then, you know, this natural thing associated with it, the capacity of this whole thing, or, you know, the size of it, right? And that size is the size that you obtain after stretching. It's large. Okay, and so finally we have this expression for the collation function and the previous one, this one. And we compare them, and we get this answer for the exponents.
Still, it could be nearby coincidence.
No, look, okay. I should probably, So you're saying that in some configurations,
mm-hmm.
these two points may happen to be in the same sector. Then what happens is that, of course, you get other products here that are important, but they make this whole thing smaller. They suppress the whole thing. It's a small distance. So the leading contribution to this thing takes into account only configurations where these things are in different sectors. Okay? So this is how you get this exponent here. And the same can be done for the bulk. I'm not going to repeat this argument for the bulk. It's very similar to what we've done before, except that you have to put this different operator here, psi 0 and by 2. And again, the correlation function can be separately evaluated in the original setup or after the conformal map is performed. And then you get this bulk multifractal exponent. And let me end with some open questions here. So first of all, in the context of fluctuating geometry, it would be interesting to compare sort of multi-point correlation functions of these operators in physical plane, meaning in the fluctuating domain. So we have to evaluate somehow the expectation value of the powers of the derivative of the map in two different points nearby. We don't know how to do it using conformal field theory, essentially because we had a way of pinning the curve to this particular point by inserting a certain operator there. But if we do it at two different points, no one guarantees that this curve, which emerges from here, will end up coming here. Yes?
So intuitively, one can rescale, and you have an exponential decay in correlations. Here you draw a geodesic.
At criticality, I'm not sure it's true.
At critic?
I think it's a power law, but I don't know which power law.
Oh,
I think if you're talking the same thing.
Well, I think we're saying exactly the same thing. Right. Yeah, we're saying exactly the same thing. Okay. There's a power law.
Yes.
And I call that
exponential
decay. I didn't specify the exponent. it's just a power law, and then with that, basically, what you're doing is decay of correlations type estimate.
Yeah, but it's in fluctuating geometry, right? So I'm saying that it's not obvious as to how to formulate this question.
But
I probably have to condition my ensemble of hitting curves which goes through two separate points in the bulk. And I don't know how to do it.
Okay, well, we'll just have to do it.
Yeah. Maybe if somebody knows how to do it, that would be nice. Because
this is a fundamentally difficult problem.
Yeah.
Sure, I understand.
Yeah, and this is precisely the type of question.
Well.
It's precisely the type of question that is interesting in quantum gravity. there people somehow avoid this issue by integrating out the position of one of the points. They say, okay, we integrate out the position of the points, and then somehow in each such thing there will be a configuration that goes to the points.
That's even more, that's natural from an FLE perspective too.
So I mean, if f of alpha max, so if alpha max is finite,
yeah,
then this should really go quite dramatically. Have an effect. Right. Oh, we'll go offline.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another interesting question, which people, as far as I know, nobody has calculated this. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe SLE people will know that. So, in fact, you have a prefactor in the scaling law. That is age dependent. I'm not talking about the prefactors that are scale dependent, like A of microscopic lattice case. There's some constants which are in fact related to what's called structure constant in the conformal field theory. In conformal field theory, when you fuse two fields, you get a bunch of other fields with some coefficients in front. And these coefficients are not trivial. They actually are basic ingredients of the conformal field theory. They determine basic relation functions, three-point functions.
In the simple cases, these can be computed.
Yeah.
No, it's just a differential equation.
That's right.
You solve it exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
For the boundary, one-point function, I can do it easily. But
yeah, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So actually, you can see the inverse map that we know this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. But then, I only know how to relate the spectra of these maps, but not the actual. Maybe. Well, you see, the point is that, again, the for the inverse map, you're sitting distance r in the mathematical plane. That gets distorted, of course, when you transform it. So it's not obvious how to. Well, anyway, so maybe we can discuss these things. Now, finally, we can have, in conformal field theories, we are, of course, have different theories with more symmetries than just Virasoro algebra. We can have Vesuminus current algebras or only algebras or whatnot. And there's a whole, in some sense, this is a wide open subject, how to describe these things using stochastic calculus, analogous to SLE. We have done some work on this in this direction by writing a stochastic equation describing Vesumina model for SU2 group. And then you can have questions about multifractal nature of some extra degrees of freedom that are present there. In addition to the geometrical nature of the trace, you have some extra vectors that are performing some random rotations there. You can ask things like that. And finally, the really, really, really challenging question is how to describe the same objects, the same, so how to find this spectra for non-conformally invariant random fractals like DLH. This is really difficult. Thank you.